The Pentagon announces that more interceptor missiles will be based at Fort Greely. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Parnell administration and public employee unions reach a tentative agreement after difficult negotiations.
Areas where we thought there might be movement tended to close down.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, committed to Alaska for nearly 60 years. From basketball games to sled dog races, Crowley supports events that bring Alaskans together. Crowley supports what matters, and public radio matters. CPDAlaska.com.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The United States is increasing the amount of interceptor missiles it stockpiles from 30 to 44. The 14 additional missiles will be based at Fort Greely near Fairbanks. Pentagon officials say they're confident the new missiles will be capable of shooting incoming long-range missiles out of the sky. They say the biggest threat is from North Korea, which recently conducted its third nuclear test. Previous missile defense tests, like one in 2008, failed to shoot incoming dummy weapons out of the sky. The upgrade to the program will cost taxpayers about $1 billion, this despite mandated cuts to future spending at the Pentagon. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says the program should be up and running by 2017. There's no indication yet whether this means reactivating the mothballed missile field at Fort Greely or whether there will be new construction. The Parnell administration and two public employee unions have reached tentative agreement for a new three-year contract to begin in July. The Alaska Public Employees Association settled earlier this week. The Alaska State Employees Association finished late yesterday afternoon. Both say they will recommend members ratify the proposal, which includes slight salary increases, while health benefits remain essentially unchanged over the current contract. From member station KTOO in Juneau, Rosemarie Alexander has more.
Negotiators from both unions say they fell short of their ambitions.
Had to recognize that the stars were simply not aligned in our favor.
Pete Ford is Southeast Regional Manager for APEA.
The legislature has been pretty specific and clear about the manners in which they want to restrain advances in employee compensation and bring about some restrictions. And the administration has similar concerns.
State law requires that financial terms of the agreements be presented to lawmakers today, the 60th day of the legislative session. In a mid-February letter to Governor Sean Parnell, Republican Senate President Charlie Huggins, House Speaker Mike Chenault, and chairman of both finance committees urged the administration to, quote, hold the monetary terms of the contracts at zero. Negotiations were well underway. Unions bargained with the administration, however, and not the legislature. Still, Ford says, it was clear the letter had a chilling effect on state negotiators.
Areas where we thought there might be movement tended to close down, and the administration recognized what the legislature was saying, and it certainly impacted or appeared to impact their flexibility at the table.
APEA represents about 2,400 members of the Supervisory Unit and the Confidential Employees Association, and ASEA about 8,000 workers in the General Government Unit. The proposal calls for salary increases of 1% each in the first and second years of the contract and 2.5% in the third year. Deputy Administration Commissioner Curtis Thayer was at the negotiating table. He says the letter from legislative leaders made the path clear.
That's one of the reasons why I think we were successful in getting the 1-1 in the first 2 years of the contract. Quite frankly, the unions came in quite a bit higher, but I think it set the tone for continuing negotiations, knowing what the fiscal outlook is for production and the price of oil. It had an effect.
ASEA business manager Jim Duncan says the atmosphere surrounding bargaining this year was difficult. He calls it a modest contract.
we're going to recommend that the membership ratify it because it's the best we can do under this atmosphere. It's got gains in it for the membership, but not clearly to the level we would have liked to have.
One gain comes for long-term employees. Those who have worked for 15 years or more will get an additional day of annual leave deposited to their account. But Thayer says state employees hired after July 1 will have fewer hours of annual leave for days worked. He says a cap also will be put on annual leave.
People that have over 1,000 hours, they're grandfathered in, but for new employees, there will be a cap of no more than 1,000 hours.
Thayer says the state's total leave liability is more than $164 million, and the leave reduction and cap are an important part of the proposed contracts.
The whole idea around leave is to take it. Take time off, recharge your batteries, come back with a fresh perspective.
Thayer says the proposal will require state employees take at least 2 weeks a year of personal leave. The unions will begin a series of meetings at work sites around the state to explain the tentative agreement, then ask members to vote in favor. In Juneau, I'm Rose Marie Alexander.
Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan has rejected an offer to freeze wages of city workers for 1 year in exchange for tabling a controversial ordinance that would limit unions. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
In the past, Mayor Dan Sullivan has said the changes his ordinance would make are needed to keep costs down, and the ordinance must be rushed because of upcoming union negotiations. But now he says there are bigger goals. In a two-page letter sent to union leaders via email Wednesday, Mayor Dan Sullivan said he couldn't take the offer made by five of the eight unions because, for him, it's about more than money.
It's about revising the way that we negotiate contracts in the future to make sure that they're standardized, that they're easier to both understand and to implement, and that they're fair to the employees and, as importantly, to the citizens that pay for public services.
Sullivan says he wants his administration and future administrations to have more control over workers. He proposed the ordinance February 8th. It would limit longevity and performance pay, benefits, and eliminate binding arbitration along with strikes. It would also allow some municipal jobs to be contracted out. Last Friday, union leaders representing about 2,200 municipal employees offered to delay the expiration of contracts in exchange for tabling of the ordinance. Monday, despite warnings from the ACLU of Alaska, the assembly ended public testimony on the issue after 285 people had testified against the ordinance over four evenings. Sullivan says he supports the assembly's decision and did not accept the union's offer because...
I didn't see any real reason to go with that. We're more than willing to negotiate the contracts that are coming up on the current time schedule, and we want to do so under the rules that are being considered by the Assembly. I'm not sure what it would have accomplished. I mean, we think the ordinance is ready to go. There'll be some minor amendments going forward, but we just didn't really see any reason to delay for a year.
Union supporters have compared the changes that Sullivan's ordinance would make to labor reform that took place in Wisconsin. Sullivan says his proposal is different because it doesn't eliminate collective bargaining. He says workers can still negotiate things like how much they get in education enhancements, clothing allowances, and tool allowances. Jillian Inglis is vice president of the Anchorage Municipal Employees Association. She represents city government workers from clerks to engineers. She's worked for the municipality for 17 years. She says she's disappointed with the mayor's response, and it shows that he doesn't want to work with unions.
I'm feeling that the mayor does not want to have a good piece of legislation, really. It takes time. And we offered to take the time and to sit down at the table with him. This has been our experience for the last 4 years. We try to make an offer and work with him, and he rejects it or he's not interested in it. For him, it's philosophical. He does not like unions.
Sullivan denies that he doesn't like unions and says he just wants to narrow the parameters of negotiation. Sergeant Gerard Aslin with the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association says the ordinance narrows the parameters so much that it leaves little to be negotiated. And he says it's being fast-tracked for a reason.
The stars have aligned for the administration. He's pretty confident, as you said from the beginning, he has the votes.
Aslin says it's no coincidence that attorneys started crafting the ordinance in secret last summer, but waited to make it public until February. Aslin says he believes that the majority of people who live in Anchorage do not support the mayor's proposal.
So what recourse are we left with other than to try to engage the community? And if that comes in the form of the polls on April 2nd, then I would say that's what we need to do.
A work session on the ordinance is scheduled for Friday, March 22nd at City Hall. The Assembly is scheduled to take action on the ordinance Tuesday, March 26th. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, making a living searching for the lights in the sky.
I used to walk around and say, I'm the Aurora Hunter, and it's stuck.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
An Iditarod sled dog described as otherwise healthy has died in Unalakleet. Race Marshal Mark Nordman said in a news release that the 5-year-old male dog named Dorado was from 38-year-old Fairbanks rookie musher Paige Drobny's team. The dog had been dropped Monday in Unalakleet and was awaiting transport back to Anchorage when it was found dead this morning. Dogs that are tired, sick, injured, or not keeping up are dropped at race checkpoints where they are tended to until they can be flown to Anchorage. Nordman said the dog died as the result of an incident caused by high winds and drifting snow. He said the weather had delayed efforts to get dropped dogs flown to Anchorage. Race spokeswoman Erin McLaren said the dog was found in snow. A necropsy was being done to determine the cause of death. After hearing that their oil tax bill could mean at least $6 billion in revenue lost over the next 5 years, the Senate Finance Committee made some adjustments yesterday. Their new bill would give oil companies a tax break of $4 to $5 billion over that same period. It would bring the base tax up from 25 to 35% for the next 3 years. That rate would drop to 33% after 2016. To offset that tax hike, it gives oil companies a $5 credit for every barrel they produce. And like previous versions of the legislation, it gets rid of a mechanism known as progressivity that raises taxes on oil when prices are high. In addition to making tweaks to the oil tax bill, the Senate Finance Committee also took testimony from the major companies on the North Slope yesterday. Representatives from ConocoPhillips and Exxon avoided making commitments to new oil production, while BP's Damian Bilbo said that the bill doesn't go far enough to attract the type of meaningful investment that's required to make the future look different. Without clear support from the Big Three, members of the Senate Finance Committee turned to their own consultants to get input on how their bill would affect oil development. Senator Mike Dunleavy, a Republican from Wasilla, asked Econ One's Barry Pulliam if their changes to the tax structure would have an effect on the production decline.
Would you be surprised if in 3 years you found out that there was little additional investment above what some would consider maintenance or routine investment? Would you be surprised if in 3 years that occurred?
I would be. If the kind of change that you're making here didn't have an impact on attracting new investment.
Pulliam added that he thought that the oil companies were excited by the prospect of a tax overhaul, but wanted to avoid making commitments in hopes of a better deal. The updated bill was moved out of committee, and the next step is the Senate floor. Buccaneer Energy Alaska has filed litigation countering a lawsuit brought by a subcontractor in December concerning work on the jackup rig Endeavor. The Endeavor is currently in Homer. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has the details.
In court documents filed Tuesday in a Texas district court, Buccaneer contends that Archer Drilling and Rig Inspection Services, the company charged with making final repairs to the rig before it was scheduled to begin drilling last fall, committed misconduct when it signed off on what Buccaneer calls a short list of tasks necessary to be completed before certification, and then produced a 10-page list of line items that would have to be resolved after the rig arrived in Alaska last August. The 30-year-old Endeavor has been docked in Homer Harbor ever since, widely missing its target initial drilling date of September of 2012 and racking up substantial fees from the city of Homer to rent out deep water dock space, some $40,000 per month. The countersuit says the owner group of the Endeavor, which includes Buccaneer and a limited liability corporation known as Kenai Offshore Ventures, or KOV, has lost more than $30 million in revenues since September 15th of last year, when the Endeavor was originally scheduled to begin work in Cook Inlet. This countersuit comes after a December filing by Archer in Texas court seeking $6 million in damages. In December, more than 70 workers on the Endeavor walked off the job, saying they hadn't been paid in weeks. Archer claimed then that the Endeavor needed more work before it was transported from Singapore to Homer in 2012, and that Buccaneer's plans were, quote, matched neither by the funding they provided or the realities of the rig's condition. The city of Homer has set a deadline of March 20th for Buccaneer to get the Endeavor out of the harbor so a new fender can be installed in the deepwater dock. The Endeavor has received permitting approval from the American Bureau of Shipping to get to work offshore of Anchor Point, but still needs clearance from the U.S. Coast Guard. Before that can happen, though, the Coast Guard needs to look at technical drawings and other inspection certificates. Currently, Archer holds those documents. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
In a financial report released by Buccaneer yesterday, the company says it has recovered the necessary documents from Archer Drilling, and a Coast Guard inspection for the Endeavor rig will happen sometime next week. The city of Homer, meanwhile, has extended the deadline for the rig to move away from the harbor to March 26th. The trial of a man accused of killing two people at the Coast Guard station on Kodiak Island has been postponed. James Wells is now scheduled to go on trial in federal court in February 2014. Wells is accused of murdering Coast Guardsman Petty Officer First Class James Hopkins and retired Chief Petty Officer Richard Belisle. A hearing was held Wednesday in which a judge postponed the trial. Wells was to go on trial next month. Federal prosecutors say a postponement allows both sides more time to prepare for what is expected to be a complex trial. The investigation generated hundreds of interviews, 20 search warrants, and dozens of grand jury subpoenas for information. Federal public defender Rich Kirtner agreed with the delay.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, information systems, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Ed Ronco. This week on AK, the Aurora. It's been an especially good winter for Aurora viewing in Alaska, and that's great news for the man known as the Aurora Hunter. Todd Salat discovered his passion for Aurora viewing 2 decades ago. Since then, he's slowly built up a successful business capturing incredible Aurora images in photos and video. But as AK's Dave Waldron found out, his job of choice takes incredible patience, too.
Todd Salat makes his living shooting photos and video of the auroras. Tonight, he's chosen a peak in the Eagle River Highlands to begin his shift.
I do say I have a 9-to-5 job, but it's 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Salat originally moved to Alaska as a geologist, but it didn't take him long to discover his true calling.
That very first year was in the peak of the last solar cycle, and the auroras were going crazy. Every night from Anchorage, I was chasing them, and I started to realize I could photograph them. and I started moonlighting as an aurora hunter.
The name Aurora Hunter was originally a bit of a joke.
I used to walk around and say, I'm the Aurora Hunter, and it's stuck. It's now a registered trademark, and somebody says, that's your brand. And I go, well, okay.
Being a professional aurora photographer may sound like the best job ever, but Salat says it can be shaky. It's kind of like being a commercial fisherman.
Yeah, I would say being an aurora photographer is a boom and bust lifestyle. I've been up there for maybe a week at a time in clouds and snow, and you're just kind of waiting and waiting. And then all of a sudden the clouds split and there's this huge pink aurora and you shoot like crazy for maybe two nights in a row and pick through those and look for what my wife and I call the hero shot, the one that you know want to hang on the wall.
And Salat has taken his share of hero shots. His portfolio, which he sells both at the Anchorage Downtown Market and online, boasts some of the most amazing auroras you will ever see, as in almost unbelievable.
I get asked that all the time. Have these been done up in Photoshop or, you know, made up on the computer? And I don't do any of that. I'm kind of a purist. You know, I don't do any double exposures. But I will say that the camera can see the auroras a little bit better than the human eye.
Of course, it takes top-notch equipment to get top-notch pictures. Salat begins setting up his cameras.
A carbon fiber tripod. Run around with these on my shoulder all the time.
Right now it's looking pretty cloudy, but if it does clear up, our chances of seeing some auroras aren't bad at all.
I did look at the geomagnetic activity right now, and it's bouncing a little bit. So now it's just a matter of staying up all night and hoping to get lucky.
And if we're going to be up all night, we're going to need to build a fire.
Nice piece of spruce. A little bit of birch.
Salat says this has been an amazing year for auroras, and that's because the Earth is in a peak phase for solar activity.
It'll probably run from, say, 2012 is when we started getting a lot of solar activity, which means more northern lights, and it'll run up through maybe 2014 or 15. But right now, we are in the peak phase, so this is a great year to keep an eye on the sky.
With the fire now going strong and the cameras set, all we can do is wait.
So this is a game of patience, huh?
Yeah. I wrote a book on aurora hunting, called it Alaska's Spectacular Aurora, but my working title for it was Waiting, ... and Waiting, because that's what I felt like I did a lot of, waiting around for that moment, that peak moment. If you're lucky, it's one of those, you know, once every 10 years shows where you're just out all night long and the auroras are turning red and pink and purple and you just can't believe how lucky you got. Of course, you sat there for, you know, 10, 20, 30 days before you got lucky, but it is amazing how you forget all the waiting when the moment hits.
After a few hours, Salat shows me some of the more modern resources used in aurora hunting.
You can come out here, got your little iPhone, open up your browser, and today's space weather.
It's looking like the solar activity has dropped, and these clouds don't seem to be clearing. But Salat is a veteran. He isn't going anywhere.
I've gotten some of my best shots on nights that were forecast for cloudy skies and low aurora activity. And then around 3 a.m., you know, it gets colder in the middle of the night, so the clouds dissipate, and then bam, an aurora comes shining through. You can look at the forecast all you want, but nothing beats having your eye on the sky.
Being a more traditional 9-to-5-er, it's time for me to leave. But even as I drive away, I can't stop glancing to the northern horizon, hoping for just a tiny glimpse of those auroras. For AK, I'm Dave Waldron.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're heading to the interior village of Galena on the Yukon River.
My name is Greg Moyer. I'm the city manager of Galena, Alaska. Proud of the town at right off the Yukon River. Used to be a military base, a forward operating base. It closed in 2008. We have this great runway that's still being maintained and a lot of infrastructure left by the base. About 600 and some airmen and airwomen left this in 2008. It took about 50% of our population from the city. So we're still recovering from that, but we're moving ahead. One of the major tenants there is the Galena Interior Learning Academy, which we're really proud of. This is a boarding school for Alaska students, grades 9 through 12, and they offer many programs like getting your license for flying and cosmetology and other engine repair, automotive. It's actually giving these students a trade. They can go back to their own villages and be employed. A lot of the rural communities are facing is the energy costs, and something we're trying to do, looking at wood pellet, like some communities have done as far as wood biomass, and that's a big project that we may start up here in this summer. We're also automating our boilers and our generators. We're doing everything in our power to even solar and LED light bulbs. We changed 60-some lights in our street lights to LED. Anything to reduce the energy costs. And so it's going to make a difference, so little by little. So it's kind of an exciting time to be here in Galena. Village of about 500 residents, proud people, hardworking people, just glad to be a part of this great state.
Greg Moyer is city manager in Galena. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Dave Waldron, Alex Duer, and Annie Feit. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Ed Ronco.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. Ed Ronco was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Kristen Spack is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Parents, be a hero to your kids. Make time to be physically active as a family. Encourage your children to participate in the Alaska Healthy Futures Challenge at their school. All kids need to do is be active 3 times a week and keep a log of their physical activities. They'll feel great and get cool prizes, too. Go to playeveryday.alaska.gov to find out if your child's elementary school is participating in the Healthy Futures Challenge. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.